Following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, True Wealth, presented by Little John Financial Services. Here are David Littlejohn and Katie Shook with True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, here we go. Welcome to the True Wealth Radio Show. And yes, you totally heard it.
I totally heard it. My bat sonar heard it.
I know. So good job. hey, I am your host, Dave Littlejohn. Thanks for tuning in. Joining me in studio today
is Katie Shook.
All right. We are going to have, as usual, lots of fun. I'm going to remind you guys right out of the gate, podcast will be available at littlejohnfs.com.
Tomorrow.
Right. So that'll be tomorrow. And also available to listen online. So that's another one that, we're starting to get people out of area that will occasionally listen. Now, I will admit, they're buddies of mine. And so I'm totally, seeding the pool there.
I don't know about that because we do have clients in a lot of various states. And mm-hmm. we do send out a reminder about the show and a link and everything so they can listen to us over the web. And so yep. we do get actual just clients. They're not always like your fraternity buddies. Like sometimes they are, other related to our firm. Yes. But other related in other ways.
So anyhow, we're glad that you guys are joining us. And we've got a bunch of stuff to talk about today. One of my favorites. I love this time of year because we get to talk about the Santa Claus rally.
At least we have one this year.
Well, we seem to. And it's, so first, Katie, we've done this a few times. Can you inform our listeners, what am I talking about?
The Santa Claus rally?
Yeah.
It's usually when the stock market is going up during the month of December. More or less.
Or just sort of the holidays in general.
Yeah.
Right? For like the Christmas holiday season, right? Christmas,
so
Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever it is now.
Right. I said December. I wasn't picking at any particular mm-hmm. holiday.
It's
although,
kind of that from Thanksgiving until New Year's.
Well, that's
how about
what I was going to ask you.
That's a good
you.
Way
yeah.
to describe it. And it really is New Year's in this case, people. So like if you're sitting there going like, oh, that's not inclusive. No, hang on. The reason is because the calendar year ends. Okay, so we're not
right.
basing this on actual holidays.
January 1 is the next year.
I continue to say that apparently you can now, since Christmas starts in August, right? if you ask Costco, Christmas starts in August.
No, Halloween starts in August. Christmas starts in September.
No. Halloween started in July.
No, that's true.
I kid you not. They had Halloween costumes like around the 4th of July.
I believe it.
And the first Christmas decorations, it was August. Because I made like a spoofy post online, which I rarely do anymore because I find basically social media to be toxic. But, I'm still there, just not nearly as often because I like to not be mad. And they know how to push my buttons. Right? I want to follow you to like see pictures of your kids and kittens. And I really don't want opinions about anything anymore.
I think, by the way, that is probably my, again, awareness of stuff is, my mama used to say, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. And why people feel that social media is their megaphone to just blast negativity out there. It's harmful.
See, my mama said something that was funny. She said, if you don't have something nice to say,
come sit next to me.
No, she said, say something vague.
I like the vague. It's, yeah.
If you can't say something nice, say something vague. I'm like, that is brilliant.
Yeah. Well, the other...
I fail at that 6 ways from Sunday, let me tell you.
It's hard sometimes to mask your opinion when it doesn't align with the room and you're trying not to get murdered in the process.
Well, yep, that's the thing. So this actually has there's some application to this in investing that we could talk about later, by the way. This idea of when you bring opinions into your investing and some of the challenges that creates, right?
That could be like a whole show.
Well, we won't turn it into a whole show.
No, but
drive
it totally
our listeners
could
crazy.
Be.
But to finish the thought on the Santa Claus rally, so usually, well, actually not, it's, there's nothing usual. Like you can find market statistics that kind of tell you things go either way, right? There are historically good months and bad months, but the Santa Claus rally is just what you call it when the markets are going up into the end of the year. And one of the base cases that I have made is that the markets have priced a lot of bad news in. Now, let me clarify. I'm not giving you investment advice, what I'm about to share. I'm just going to give you an opinion. Don't act on this one independently. And if you do, it's on you. Okay. That's like my full disclosure on air here.
Okay.
But the idea that what I'm seeing is it looks like the markets, like they're not surprised by bad news. If we came out with a thing that said, oh, look, the COVID cases are on the rise, the market says, and?
Yeah. Yeah, we knew that.
Right? We knew
we
that.
Already thought about that like right? 6 months ago.
Ooh, hospitalizations are on the rise and death rates on the rise. And the market, because remember, markets have no empathy. They just go, and?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, markets really don't have empathy. You know, if you're like, well, markets are mean, it's like it's neither mean nor nice nor anything else. It's just
because it's artificial. It's not
data.
A human being.
Well, I mean, it's the supply and demand are certainly driven by humans, but it's
the market
driven
itself
by people that are opportunistic.
Right.
Right. You know, it's like so the market's just looking at, well, can I or can't I profit from this? It's not doesn't bring a conscience to the matter. And some of that may even be part of the problem with bad behavior in companies, right? Like if you don't have ethics, that's a problem. But the markets themselves, they're not really a reflection of the ethics. The underlying companies are the reflection of the ethics, right?
True.
Whatever's being traded is sort of the ethical barometer, not the fact that the trade is occurring necessarily. So anyway, in the weeds again, right?
What? Here's the weed whacker. But anyways, do you see anybody like forecasting or foreshadowing market movement, or like have you heard anything from people saying like I want to invest in these certain companies because of the policies I see coming down the pipeline?
Sure.
Based on who they assume the president's going
to
be next?
Well, there's lots of people trying to game that one. Largely it's difficult, right? I expect Biden is the president. I know there's still some people out there kind of holding out hope that there will be some sort of court challenge, like a judicial challenge to the vote that would change the outcome. I put that probability in the low single digits right now.
That's how it actually manifests. Yeah.
So if we're just looking at the probabilities here, I'm saying, okay, so Biden's the president. And what I can't game is the outcome of the election results in Georgia for the Senate, since they're having a runoff in January.
Oh.
This, interestingly enough, is aggravating to the nth degree for analysts, because how do you finalize any kind of assumptive models for forecasting when you have a giant hanger like that and it's in January, right? So I can't do it at the end of the year going, well, looking next year, it's like, what, do I do projections in February?
It's like, well, I'm going to do a forecast.
Well,
and
you can. And so you will. So it's like, all right, well, we'll take projection V1, version one, right, that we'll do at the beginning of the year.
And then we'll modify it after we know more data.
Projection V2 in February. And you know, analysts are always upgrading their models and projections to try to explain price. This is a hilarious thing, by the way. You know, there's sort of a joke out there that if you want to know whether or not God has a sense of humor, just make plans.
Oh, no. That, yeah.
Right?
So that gets a big amen from me because.
So there's that one. And then the other is people think that because they have a model that tries to explain the way a market behaves, that that's an accurate explanation. Okay, it may have explained it in the moment, but markets love to just sort of do their own thing. And so up, and then that model, it worked until it didn't. Right?
Right.
So the market doesn't care about your analysis. That's the really funny thing about it. Supply and demand really determine the price. How much is available and how many people want it?
Right, okay. And we've talked about
and
even
so lots
real
of
estate.
It's available and nobody wants it. The price is really low. Hardly anything is available and everybody wants it. The price is really high.
Do you remember years ago when they had like the Tickle Me Elmo and it
yeah.
came out and like parents were fighting in the stores
yeah.
over it? I mean,
sure.
I just think of like, you know, every crazy Christmas movie out there where like some parents
Jingle
fighting
all the way.
Oh my gosh,
right?
Is that
Arnold
the one with
Schwarzenegger
yes.
and the Rocket Man guy that
weren't they fighting over some like Stretch Armstrong toy or something
no,
that
it
came
was,
out?
Well, I mean, it was just an action figure type
right.
toy.
But right? but that's my point though. It's the supply and demand. But we've even talked a little bit about real estate and how that's going to be affected coming up, right? With supply and demand and
well,
based
sure.
on some of the stuff we've affected
all of
during
stuff,
COVID.
All markets ultimately come down to its supply and demand, right? If you have the most valuable thing in the world to you and nobody else wants it, it's still valueless to everybody but you.
True.
Right? You know, a family heirloom could be priceless to you and to everybody else, it's worthless.
Which is like soul crushing sometimes.
It, well, that may be true, but that's what a market's about. Now,
but that
the
also
value
shows
that
you the
place,
emotional side that we place on
well,
it, right? Like the emotional vulnerability.
That is part of the equation, right? Part of the equation comes down to whether or not somebody else wants it. And so that's the demand part of it. Okay. Some things are easier when it comes to demand than others. Things like food.
Yeah. Okay?
At some point, like I've tested this. I joked with some farmer clients of mine that it turns out that farming doesn't go out of style because eating doesn't go out of style.
True.
In fact, overeating doesn't even seem to go out of style culturally for us. We can go through a massive economic pullback and we still seem to be obese. So we, that's an unfair statement, right? And that is not to mock people that genuinely are suffering from food shortage, right? That's not what I'm trying
no.
to be here. I'm not really being insensitive. I'm just
pointing
out
like. But like we can't just
like,
stop growing food. Like
yes.
there's, I mean, we,
so
we need
those. So
there
is a fixed demand and that really, that triggers a lot of other stuff. The fact that we have metabolic activity creates an economy.
Right.
Right? You have to eat, which means somebody has to grow food, which means then you produce farm equipment, which then means you also produce other things to support
gasoline
the farm equipment
or fuel,
and the other things that are
yeah.
byproducts. And it just keeps spidering out for eternity, right?
Right.
So that's how an economy is sort of born. Well, if we think about the markets and the supply and demand, I go back to the Santa Claus rally. I'm going to bring this all home and wrap this segment in a tidy bow for you, just like a Santa Claus rally should.
Aww.
Which is that the markets price things in all the time, and the markets are trying to figure out, well, what should I expect for the future? And it would take something that's really not known to shake the market from here, because much of it's priced in. I mean, like, we kind of know unemployment is bad. We know that we're printing money. We know that COVID is out there. We know that things are shut down, and so we know that there's job losses and other stresses. What we don't know is, will there be stimulus or not? Okay.
How long?
The market's sort of assuming we don't have stimulus yet.
Right.
If we get it, that's a positive, right? As far as the markets are concerned.
Well, and I've seen some weird stimulus packages presented.
But again, you know, until there's ink on the page, those are just concepts. Okay. And the market is handicapping. Every time a new thing comes out, it's like, well, is that likely to happen or not? Okay. Can it get through the House and then through the Senate? That's the other wild card, right? Like, I'll give you one last wild card to think about before we wrap this first segment. And that is, consider this. Right now, there's federal legislation that's gone through the House of Representatives and is going to the Senate to legalize marijuana.
Yeah, I saw that.
Okay, that would potentially be a landscape change for an industry. Okay,
yeah.
But right now, it's just a proposal. It has to get through the Senate, and then it has to survive to the president. So what's the timing of it? Do you wait until the Biden administration gets to sign it? Do you try to push it through before the end of the year?
Is there a deadline on stuff?
There's not necessarily a deadline, but if it doesn't make it through the process, it just sort of dies on the vine, right? So the Senate could just never approve it, and it doesn't go to the president. So it originates in the House. It also has to pass the Senate, which is why you need to have both bodies capable of passing legislation when you have gridlock, which is why it matters the outcome in Georgia. There you go. Now, the market's looking at it saying Georgia's not until January, so we got to deal with the knowns right now. Sort of explains why the only surprises out there are things that would lead to more knowns, not less. Well, I guess not surprises. The things the market's looking at, it's priced a lot of this in, is my point. So that's why it seems to keep grinding higher, in my opinion, is because it's like, well, what's the bad? If something bad shows up that we didn't see coming, markets could totally roll over. you know, or the markets could just be, you know, who knows what the trigger is.
And?
Yeah. But anyway, so there you go. Santa Claus rally. We'll tie that one up with a bow, and we're going to grab a break. So stick around, and we'll be right back. When we do come back, I'm going to talk to you about something kind of interesting to me that we're getting questions about, and that is, what is Bitcoin? You're hearing it. We're going to unpack that a little bit, but we got to grab a break first. So stick around. We'll be right back. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Katie Shook.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 1240.
KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240, KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Show.
So, I feel like it's like a game show and it's a speed round. And it's like we're playing a bad game of like Pictionary. Well,
but you realize their listeners don't know.
I know.
Right? Here's what happens. Katie is, she's now projecting. This is like, this is bad acting, right? This is bad actor.
It's totally bad acting.
Because right now, the main radio station is having some broadcast issues, but the stream online is still working.
It's totally good.
You're listening online, or if you listen on the podcast, you'll never know the difference.
True.
But Katie keeps thinking you know the difference at every break, and I'm like, they don't know. But now you know.
But it just validates that it's a live show. And that we just have to roll with the punches sometimes.
Yeah, and sometimes the doo-doo flies. So
hopefully not in my direction or into a fan.
Is that a fan? Yep.
No.
All right.
Awful.
Look. If you're listening online, hey, you already get the drill. And if you're listening on the podcast, you found us. Good job. So here's what we're going to talk about this segment. To some, you totally get it. You're going to be like, yawn, no big deal. To others, you're going to be like, what? It's just such a weird thing, but it's just in the public sphere right now, and that is Bitcoin.
I feel like it comes back every Christmas, like it's the weird thing to buy.
In this case,
because I always feel like people start asking us, they don't ask about Bitcoin during the year. I feel like they always ask about it like November, December.
Oh, I think people ask about Bitcoin in general. It's just interesting right now because it is at an all-time high. Right. And I look back to, I remember it took a while, right? I think 2017 was the last time it had these kinds of highs. I didn't know it was a major pullback. And then, you know, here we are 3 years later and it's back up. And folks are kind of, I think they're starting to ask the question, like, what is this thing? What's it all about? And so I just wanted to talk a little bit about it. I know that it's super important to Katie's financial future. Right.
Yeah. All $50 I invested in it to see where it would go.
Yeah. At the nearly all time highs.
I didn't. I'm actually up money. I just looked right now. I was like, oh, sweet. I didn't. Yeah.
Right.
I was not at the low point. That's for sure.
Yeah. You know, you've owned it for a while and you've just kind of let it do what it does.
When there are things like that where there's speculation to me, I just want to, I'm more like just to see where it goes. I'm not worried about it.
Here's the great thing about it. Katie, what is Bitcoin?
It's a cryptocurrency.
Okay, what is that?
It's an online currency. It's not like traded through a bank, and it bounces around from. I remember you explaining how it works. It, like bounces around.
So this is the trick. I'm going to try to see if I get Katie to explain Bitcoin, just because I want to know how much you know. You own it, so what is you own?
I feel like I'm a normal person, right? I own things that I don't fully understand. Okay, great, yay! I'm like every other investor out there.
You're totally normal.
I know it's a cryptocurrency. I know it's something that like I can't go to my bank and be like, oh, I own Bitcoin here. Let me deposit it in my bank account. It's held separately. It's online. I know it can be used to purchase things. I've never done that though.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that is worldwide. Right?
Yes.
So it's not like it has a different valuation based on what country you're in. It's the same valuation because it's worldwide.
Well, sort of. It just depends on what currency that you're going to exchange it for because exchange rates matter. So
right.
Is the Bitcoin fluctuates in value the same way that currencies fluctuate in value between each other as well. But there's the Bitcoin itself is not affected by a government authority of any kind. It wasn't issued by government.
Right. And it's, but I don't, is there more of it being produced? Is there an unlimited amount?
No.
Is there a fixed amount?
Sort of.
There's a market, obviously, because there's a value to it, right? Is it traded on the regular stock exchange?
No. So Bitcoin is an odd animal. So first, to understand what the heck it is, we've got to break down a little bit about it. And so before I can talk about Bitcoin and really help our listeners to get it, we got to talk a little bit about currency.
Okay.
Okay. So first of all, what is currency?
It's a way for us to purchase and sell things.
Yeah. It's a store of value, essentially.
Right.
Okay. And lots of different countries have their own currency. If you go to Europe, they have the euro, which is a multi-country currency. So it can be utilized in multiple places. Some would argue that the U.S. dollar is a multi-country currency because many countries peg their currency to the dollar, meaning they just make it the same value.
Or they use the dollar.
Or they just use the dollar. Yeah. The idea of a currency is that it's easier to carry around currency than it is to carry around gold or a grandfather clock or a grand piano or something to trade for.
Right.
So we
it's more consistent in trading value.
Yeah, it's a store of value. And traditionally, governments have been the ones that have sort of produced the currency on behalf of the entire country. And they've created a standardized unit. Well, one of the big criticisms of government right now everywhere, I think, is how governments manage currency.
True.
Okay? Because in the United States, for example, the currency is no longer pegged to anything specific.
Yeah, because wasn't it originally pegged to the gold standard?
Well,
but
there
now
was
it's
a,
not?
For a period of time, yeah. There was gold on reserve that backed up every dollar in circulation.
But now there's not enough gold to do that.
Correct. Because we've essentially printed more dollars. And at some point, more dollars chasing the same amount of gold.
Right.
It's an inflationary trend because now look at the price of gold. Look, we used to have $1 bought an ounce of gold, and then $10 bought an ounce of gold. Now $2,000
right?
buys an ounce of gold. So what happens when it's $5,000 for an ounce?
Well, wedding rings get really expensive.
Right. But,
just
but
for the gold.
And then you also look at it and say, and minimum wage is like, you know, $150 an hour.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's like that's crazy. The kind of thing that can happen is that when you keep printing more currency, you keep sort of watering it down. It has less purchasing power.
Okay.
Because of that. And so it takes more in order to buy the same amount of stuff if you keep producing more currency. Well, the thing about Bitcoin is it's not something where the government can print more. Bitcoin is tracked on something called a blockchain.
Because there's no government that's over this currency.
Well,
like it didn't.
Yeah, it
there's not one specific government that
it
created
it. It wasn't created by government. I don't remember the name. There's a person that, or it may have been a group of people, but it's an alias that was credited with creating this. You can probably find it. It's out there. But
Because I have blockchain as an app, and I also have Coinbase as an app.
Yeah, so Coinbase is a digital wallet, is what that's called. That's sort of like a custodian that tracks your Bitcoin for you.
Right.
Okay.
Now there's Bitcoin and there's Ethereum.
That's another type of that's an altcoin.
And
Bitcoin
there's
Litecoin. That's an altcoin as well. Right.
And
so,
there's Stellar. I mean, there's all these other ones. I'm like, what in the heck? It just kind
Ether,
of
yeah. There's a bunch of them. So these were all. Think of it as, since there's no centralized authority for this, like the way Bitcoin started was first, there was this concept of a blockchain. Blockchain, in for lack of a better description, is a publicly owned and monitored database. It's distributed, meaning that everybody that tracks a blockchain, all the computers share computing power to maintain the blockchain. It's an information bin, if you will, and that information is everybody can see it at the same time. So you need when you're adding to it or changing it, everybody can see it. So because it's in the public sphere, it is hard to fake because everybody can see it. And right now, at last estimates I read, there's about 47,000 active Bitcoin trackers on this blockchain.
Wow.
Which means that you would need enough computing power to have 51% or more of the calculating power of 47,000 computers in order to
That's a lot of computers to hack at one time.
A blockchain. You have to go in and sort of recopy everything so fast that nobody else could notice it happened in order to make it look like it was authentic. So it becomes almost mechanically impossible because it's so broadly distributed and there's so many computers that are simultaneously watching this thing and running the
algorithms,
the components
figure it all
to
out,
keep
yeah.
it stable, that it's mechanically impossible to do. Like, there's not enough computer power out there. Like, even a supercomputer comes along, it can't outdo 47,000 networked computers.
Hmm. Interesting. So why is Bitcoin important then?
Well, it's important because people basically decided it had value. I know that sounds funny for me to say, but if somebody just decides that something has value and they're willing to assign it a value, and then other people, because of the demand and supply. See, Bitcoin is, first of all, it's a trackable thing. You have this incorruptible record through a blockchain that you can see who owns it.
Right.
It is, it's a peer-to-peer thing. It doesn't go through any government organization. Peer-to-peer means all the computers are directly connected to each other. And so you've got this it's called a cryptocurrency because the token that tells you how much that you own of the currency is encrypted, and the blockchain has one part of the encryption, and then the owner has the other part of the encryption to unlock it. So everybody can see it, but they don't know what your private encryption is. Most of these wallets that you have, you don't probably know your encryption key, but nope. You know your passwords to get into the wallet, and they know your encryption key.
Right.
So the idea is that there's only so much Bitcoin in existence because the formula for how Bitcoin was created said, well, to mine Bitcoin, you have to write a blockchain that's running a complex algorithm. Once you get a new block, you add more blocks. And after a certain number of blocks, you issue a new Bitcoin. But every time you issue more blocks, the new Bitcoin value gets cut in half, or the number of coins that you get rewarded for each additional block. So eventually you don't make more coins, right? There's only so many in existence, which is kind of like gold, right? There's only so much in existence. It gets harder and harder and rarer and rarer.
What's happening to your voice?
I know. Sorry, I had a frog in my throat.
He's going, it's harder and harder. All of a sudden, yeah. His voice is going down deeper.
It gets rarer to be able to produce more of this blockchain, and it's harder.
Right.
So you get fewer and fewer new coins in existence. Now, coins can be divided up, and you can have fractions of a coin and stuff like that. But the idea again is
that
because it's a finite amount, just like gold, it has a stable value if people believe it to be valuable. And I say that because what if gold wasn't valuable? Like, you're like, I got a whole bunch of gold. And everybody looks at you and goes, so?
Right.
I don't want your stupid gold. Right. And then it's useless. But that's not how it's worked historically. Like, well, gold's a store of value.
Well, but that has happened with other things. I mean, there's been like other types of gold, like chocolate gold or whatever. It was like there were certain grades. There's chocolate and there's rose. There were certain grades of stuff that were considered low grade. And then all of a sudden they became trendy and they became really valuable based on the trend.
Well, that's like anything, right?
Right.
You could say that iPhones are like that, right? At first they're really valuable. Everybody they pay up to get an iPhone. They pay more, right?
Right.
For a while, there was a surcharge. Like, I remember that you could, if you wanted to go buy it was a Plymouth Prowler. It was this kind of cool roadster, right?
Oh, I remember those,
and
yeah.
It's like, oh, sure, the factory price for this vehicle was $65,000. And then the market premium was $40,000, right? So it was a $105,000 car.
Oh, my gosh.
Because the suggested retail price, but the demand was so high that you had to pay more than book to get it. So that was an example of that. Now, cars are a weird example because usually they're depreciating assets. Usually, not always. But the Bitcoin thing, back to, you know, what is it and why do you care? Well, it was a created currency, or it was a created item that was given value because it has perceived value. But it's incorruptible by government because it's maintained by this peer-to-peer network that tracks the authenticity of the data or exchange record, which is held on a blockchain. The blockchain is the critical element, and it's the technology that makes Bitcoin so interesting. Blockchain, you know, just watch on this one. I'm making a call on the radio that the future, blockchain is heavily involved. It's really useful for things like tracking ownership and title of property and things that we want to be able to maintain authenticity in the public. If you want to be able to trust the chain of custody of information, blockchain is a really good way to do it because it's really hard to spoof.
So you're not saying Bitcoin in general, but blockchain itself.
Blockchain, the foundation of how Bitcoin was established. You can have blockchains for other things too. It doesn't have to be Bitcoin. Just like Bitcoin has its own blockchain, Ethereum has its own blockchain, the whatever the other ones you started naming off, you know.
Oh, I know. There's
like
a ton
all
of them.
The different the types, you know. Then there was one of them created by
Facebook,
Litecoin and
XRP, Stellar, Lumen.
Yeah, all of these different things have their own blockchains underneath them, and they're called cryptocurrencies, right?
Interesting.
And so as a group, cryptocurrencies get traded around, and they can go up or down in value depending on who wants to own them and when. And so there's your basic primer on Bitcoin. It's considered a currency because it is exchangeable for value. There are now vendors that will allow you to pay for things. You could use PayPal, for example, and use Bitcoin to pay for things. They will convert the Bitcoin into a value and use it to exchange with somebody else. So they'll just like converting a currency, if you want to go buy euros with dollars, you could do that. And you know, you can do that now with Bitcoin as well. And
crazy.
Other types of altcoins as well. So cryptocurrencies, that's how you use them for payment. So there you go, gang. Folks have asked the question, what is this Bitcoin thing all about? Now you know a little bit more than before you started. Or maybe you know a lot more than me, in which case you can be the teacher next time. But let's grab our next break because we got to do that. And then when we come back, more to discuss things like, oh, I don't know, if you are wondering what's going on in the crazy world of shutdowns, we want to talk a little bit about how to be financially smart between now and especially with Christmas expenses coming up. How should we be managing our budget? So that and more when we come back. Stick around. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Katie Shook.
We got True Wealth on News Radio 1240.
KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240, KQEN.
All right, gang, we are back. So thanks for hanging with us on that break. We are going to be taking a little bit of a shift now. You know, we're into the holiday season, and regardless of the holiday that you choose to celebrate or not celebrate, you know, the big one on a lot of people's minds, and let's, you know, I'm not even going to, I guess I've tap danced around it enough. We're done here. If you don't like it and it's not politically correct enough, tough break. It's Christmas, right? And, you know, because Christmas is as much an economic event as it is a spiritual event anymore
right.
For many people. I mean, there are a lot of folks that celebrate Christmas because they just want to do presents, and it doesn't have a whole lot to do with a churchy thing at all.
Nope.
So we're
yeah, I was going to say, because even non-believers still give presents and have
right.
a tree, and it's
and for everybody and, out there that's like, well, where are you going? Here's why. Because look, I'm like out of the closet telling people, okay, Christian guy, right? Like, I'm okay fessing to that. So Christmas is my holiday of choice, but it's not because I'm like oppressing
Christmas
you because
is your
if you
jam?
Disagree. Christmas is my jam, right? And so there's a whole lot of other reasons for Christmas, and I'm okay with like just telling you guys that I am that classic mold of like, yep, white, Anglo-Saxon, Protestant, heterosexual male. I'm like, okay, it is.
You're vanilla.
Right? It is. I'm vanilla, and that's how it goes. But so yeah, and in this day and age, you know, people like overread into things. I'm like, well, don't. That's not the point. The point, though, is many people do overspend.
Yes.
And that's a huge elephant in the room, especially in the COVID landscape, right?
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'll tell you what COVID's done that I think is really tough And it's because the stock market's at like all-time highs, right? I mean, we're all-time or near all-time highs for stock
better
market.
Better than all-time lows.
Well, but I want you to think about and juxtapose that to the fact that there are people that are unemployed,
right?
And they're having unemployment benefits run out right now, and they're reaching a threshold of like panic.
Oh, okay? Yeah.
Because they have been deemed in a non-essential work environment and they've been shut down.
True.
Okay, and I'm dumping the politics aside right here, and I'm going straight to like the human tragedy aspect of that. That for where what that does to people's budgets is just incredible strain, and it illustrates why there are a couple things that financially are really really important, and one of them is the concept of this is an example why emergency funds exist.
Right.
And I will hear folks, there's a group that your eyes may roll because you're already in a spot where you're like, look, we're past that, right? Like we're not doing the emergency fund. We're doing the credit card dance. And I understand. I'm not trying to trivialize that position. What I'm trying to say, though, is like I hope that culturally we can all learn from this kind of deal right here. And that as a result, maybe next time we don't have the same kind of stuff happen.
I know. It's true. It's, you know, we taught financial peace for many years and we still believe in the principles. And Dave Ramsey used to say, you need to have 3 to 6 months worth of an emergency fund. I know. See, it's just live show. 3 to 6 months worth of an emergency fund set aside for your expenses. Now, that doesn't mean that you're going to eat steak every night, right? Like it means like if you're not working, you ratchet in that belt and you start living off of beans and rice. But that you should be able to float yourself in case of an emergency. And by the way, pandemic, global emergency.
Yeah, well, you know, and again, not like, I don't care how or why it happened. It did.
It did.
And so that's what this thing's about. And so I recognize that for a lot of folks, you know, life financially is on the edge. Here's the problem, and this is why we're going to address this for the holiday season here, is wants versus needs and what folks are doing. You know, we've commercialized Christmas.
Oh, completely.
A lot.
Yeah.
And turned it into this almost obligatory gift giving event. And people do financial damage to themselves by trying to go down this pathway when they can't afford to. There's this tremendous pressure, whether it's emotional, guilt driven, whatever it may be. And on top of COVID already. I mean, here's the really cruel thing about COVID that I wanted to point out is it picked winners and losers. I've said all along, and this is my take on this, and this is political, and I'll just say it anyway. It's scary when the government chooses winners and losers.
Yes.
Like it's like, well, there was no vote on what was essential or not. There was a dictator, a mandate that said it will be this way. And so some people were not damaged the way some others were. Part of why this is so tough is that it was disproportionately damaging to the boots on the ground service community, right?
Yes.
Like the restaurant, waiters, travel, and hospitality.
Yep.
That environment has been disproportionately hit by COVID because of all these shutdowns.
Right.
And so many folks in those industries find themselves without an income right now. And then you ask, well, why is the stock market so high with unemployment where it is and whatnot? There are reasons for this, right? There's good academic reasons why, not the least of which is that the folks that are hurting the most tend to be on the lower end of the socioeconomic spectrum, right? You know, the wait staff isn't the high earners in our economy.
True.
And I'm not picking on wait staff.
No,
I'm sharing
you guys,
data
there's
here.
Plenty of great waiters
but
out there.
That's what makes it tough. Is because that group of folks is really being hammered by this thing. And so and when you're already in a lower income bracket, then say it comes off as really almost highfalutin to suggest, well, why don't you have an emergency fund? And what I would suggest is all the more important.
Right.
Right. And there's also there's lots of things we could unpack on this one about the how and why to stay out of that. The lower portion of the socioeconomic curve, right? Or that should be a stepping stone to climbing higher, right? That's not that's not a value judgment or anything about people. It's about saying, well, what skills do you have and what are more valuable skills that you want in the economy to climb?
Right.
Okay. But again, back to the holidays here. My first thing is you really should be not overspending for Christmas, and especially if you don't have the money in the first place to spend. So that's rule number one, is that don't let pride or social pressure lead you into bad financial decisions.
Now, on the flip side of that, because of the pandemic and because people are not gathering the way they would normally around Christmas time, do you feel like there is that pressure to overspend? Like, do you feel like it's higher or lower? Because I feel like...
I think it's lower.
I feel like people are going, well, I'm not going to go visit grandma and grandpa anyway, so I'm not spending the money to go travel. I'm not worried about getting them a gift because I can't go
lower.
See them.
And here's another thought, and this is not one... I won't take credit for this, but I will share it anyway. Use this as an opportunity to perhaps redefine some family traditions. I think most of us... when you're kids, you just kind of like the toys, right?
Right.
But at some point... The time with the people you care about is as
or
valuable. More important.
Right.
And so maybe it's less about trying to get everybody a gift as it is to, like in my family, I'm a big family, right? So
You have lots of brothers and sisters.
We're going to be not getting the whole family together for our annual Christmas gathering. And when we do, it's, we're talking about like 15 nephews and nieces. And it's a 30-40 person gathering when we do this.
Well, even just buying all of them a gift at $20 a whack, which is not much, but my gosh, it's hundreds of dollars for the little ones.
And that's the point. So we would draw names, and then the little ones, even they're drawing names now because it just got unwieldy and too expensive. And now it's even the discussion is, should we change the tradition even further to just be, is it more like a fun game of we'll get more like a white elephant style where people can steal gifts and play and it's kind of cute and fun. So we'll see. We'll see what the future looks like, but I think we get to reinvent some trends right now. And I would really try to frame it that way, is COVID has changed a lot of the world. It is okay to change traditions and make better financial calls with those changes.
Right. It's funny you talk about the gift exchange, because that's what my family does. That's our tradition when we used to get all together, is everybody could buy a gift, but it had to be under $20. So we set a price limit to make it affordable. Mm-hmm. And if you brought a gift, then you were part of the gift exchange, right? And of course, we played a game and you got to steal and do all the fun stuff with it. And it's interesting because one year we said, okay, well, we'll do gift cards, because there's always a handful of gift cards in the gift exchange somewhere anyway. And it wasn't as fun. Doing gift cards. Like, we were more excited about getting the monkey butt shampoo.
Yep.
And by the way, that is still there's always that one white elephant gift that keeps getting regifted. I mean, it has been around now for 12 years, and it's a legit product. It's called monkey butt shampoo.
Yep.
But the fact that, the minute somebody opens the monkey butt, it's
I got it. It's, exactly.
And then you always wonder where it's been hiding the whole entire year and who has it and what closet it's been in.
No doubt.
Those are the fun traditions, right? Those are the memories that you remember, not the little gift that you got that year.
Totally. So awesome. Well, look, let's leave this one simply at this. Come Christmas time or holiday season, pick your choice there. Mine is, use it as a chance to reinvent traditions that are good, financially healthy traditions. And keep in mind, this is the True Wealth Show. I'm telling you, money's not how you manage your worth. Okay. Money's how you trade your time. Okay, it's the relationships and the memories that are the true currency. So keep that one in mind. Stick around. We're going to be right back. And when we do, we will talk about the emergency fund and how much should it be and where might it go. We got some fun statistics to share. So we got to take our last break. So this is Dave Littlejohn.
And Katie Shook.
Yeah, True Wealth on News Radio 1240.
KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang. Welcome back. Home stretch of the True Wealth Show. Reminder, if you're just joining us, you can check us out on the podcast, too.
Or check out our website, littlejohnfs.com.
That's right. All kinds of goodies, and it keeps changing, and it keeps growing up, so it's fun. And also, look, you can if there was stuff on the show that you wish that we would cover,
Please let us know.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, we're still playing with, we got some fun ideas in the works here, and you'll probably see some fun stuff in 2021 as well that we're going to add to the tech suite. But for the time being, I think we're good here. So, send us emails to info@littlejohnfs.com. And
shoot
we're
us
happy
a message
to,
on
just,
Facebook.
Yeah, the,
all
the,
this the stuff.
The Bitcoin question was one that came up. People said, hey, you know, I want to more about Bitcoin. So that's why we brought it up. So look, Katie, we had some kind of fun stats that we pulled.
We do,
right?
Because you love statistics.
I do. And this is what this is so the emergency fund concept, right? Now, the first one is emergency fund really should be 3 to 6 months of income. Okay, that's what it should be is
well,
3 to 6 months of living expenses.
Living expenses, which is not
true.
Necessarily income, because a lot of times
you,
there's fluff in there that we spend that doesn't necessarily need to be included.
Cut out all the extra stuff. Like cut out your entertainment budget, cut out your 401k contributions or your retirement plans,
right.
Like all that stuff. Just get down to life support.
Right.
But yeah, so but the first step is get $1,000. Even if you've got debt, you need $1,000 of emergency fund.
And do it as fast as you can.
Exactly. Like don't even, it's not pay off the credit cards, then do this. It's like, no, you get $1,000 of cash somewhere so that you don't have to keep going back to the credit cards for emergencies.
Right.
And then you pay off the credit cards.
Right.
What do people think they would spend $1,000 on if they had an emergency?
It's usually either medical or vehicle.
Okay.
So vehicle is I would say vehicle is probably the number one. Flat tires. You know, engine parts, things that cost several hundreds of dollars. But the vehicle one is the one that keeps getting brought up the most. But interestingly, since you started talking about statistics, do you know what percentage of people have no money in a savings account?
Oh, it's huge. Probably. Is it above 40?
It's 45%. It's almost half.
Ouch.
Like almost half of you out there listening. No, not our listeners because they're smart people. But half of the I'd say at least the U.S. have no money in savings.
Right. And I think these figures are 2019 figures. But hey, 2020 is not technically over. So
well,
I can't give you.
And it could be worse because people that had money in savings could be depleting
it
right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, who knows where the statistics are now. 24% have less than $1,000. So we're talking about that $1,000 emergency fund. So right there is
almost
70,
yeah.
Almost, yeah, 70% have less than $1,000.
Ouch.
Pretty scary. And I mean, $1,000, talk about life support.
Yeah, and it because $1,000 doesn't go that far these days.
No.
I mean, it can buy you a few meals, but it's not going to buy you like, you know, a new transmission or something.
Right. Like it's pretty limited. 12% have up to $5,000 saved. So a little bit higher. $5,000 to $10,000 is about 5%, and it's about 5% in each category above that. So, I mean, the vast majority, like you said, over two-thirds of people have less than $1,000 in savings.
Yeah.
It's
a toughie.
Crazy.
And then the flip side is I think about 10% of people have above 25 or 50,000. It's something high.
No, it's 6%.
Well, 6% above 50, right?
Right.
But then below
that
is
10% above
20,000. So if you count.
So there's not much in the middle. It's
yeah,
like people
that's
either don't
I
have
mean.
Anything or they have quite a bit, but there's not a whole lot. I mean, there's only 10% that have, or let's say it's I'm sorry, I'm adding up really quick. It's about 20% that have between 1,000 and 20,000.
Right. Well,
Between 1,000
and
20,000.
And then
so
the remaining 10% is that 20 and above. And
right.
6% have more than 50. And that the reason it's interesting is because I think that this explains a little bit of the income distribution. But I think more so than that, this is a like culture thing. And so we've talked about this before. If you want to change your financial success, you need to change your relationship with money. And
right.
That's a culture thing. But look, hey, we're out of time, right? I hear the music. And so we better get rocking and rolling here. Katie, how do they reach us if they want to dig deeper into stuff?
They can call us 541-375-0898.
Okay. So also you go to the website, you can send the emails and all that good stuff. But, you know, we'll look forward to hearing from you. Until next time, this has been David Littlejohn.
And Katie Shook.
You've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 1240.
KQEN.
Paid for by Littlejohn Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.